Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Monday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, Joel Elkanen. Dennis Dick, on today's show, we are talking about the decision by several Asian countries, including China, to ground their fleet of Boeing planes and the reaction the market is having to that news. This morning, we have some M&A. NVIDIA is buying MLNX, and we have a lot of ratings this morning, a lot of analyst activity, upgrades and downgrades on some very big names. So we'll talk through those as well. We'll also take your questions from our chats, both on youtube.com/BenzingaTV and premarket.benzinga.com. Joel, what is the word here in the overnight session?
We got some green on the screen, Spencer, up 3.25. We are talking the June contract now. That will be ESM19. Overnight low, 2741.75. That's just below your daily pivot at 2745. So nice target on the downside. Mid-range comes in at 2750. Pre-market high comes in at 58.25. Not much there, folks. We came pretty hard through the 70 and the 60 handle yesterday. So not seeing any major resistance until we get closer to 2770. We have crude trading in the green by 34 cents at 56.41. OPEC giving that a little boost today. Gold running into problems at 1,300, down $4.10 at 1,295.20. Silver in the red by 3.9 cents as well at 15.31. And I don't think Bitcoin's moving anymore. I have the Bitcoin futures down $37.50 at 33,850, unable to break into that $4,000 handle. We'll bring in Triple D here. Triple D, how you doing?
What's going on? We're seeing some movement here. I've had better days, and this is interesting. So both of my parents have glaucoma, and I was just getting checked out just because my dad's got issues with it. My mom has it. So it's more just, you know, I hadn't been to an eye doctor for a while. So I went in and actually my dad was diagnosed last year. My mom just last year as well. So I was like, well, I should get checked out too, because, you know, if it gets on too late, it can cause vision problems. And obviously, you know, even loss of vision if it goes too far. So just precautionary. I go see the eye doctor and I did a couple tests and they're like, your tests were okay, but there was one little area that they didn't like or something. So they just sent me to the glaucoma specialist just to be sure. She's like, I think you're fine, but let's just go get it checked out. So I go to the glaucoma specialist Friday afternoon, and he looks at my eye for like 1 second and says, you have glaucoma. I was like, you mean I'm getting glaucoma? He's like, no, you have it. I was like, oh, great. So anyways, it's early. He says very treatable. I've got to do these eye drops in my eye, and then I have to have a surgery on the right eye and then surgery on the left eye. Surgery in April on the right eye, and surgery on May on the other eye. I don't know why they don't do them both at the same time, but that's the way they do it. So you have to put these drops in your eyes until the surgery, and this is to get the pressure down in my eye. And I don't know if anybody's like got glaucoma out there or they've got experience with this, but you put these drops in your eyes, and it feels like you're putting like dirt in your eye. So anyways, I put them in last night for the first time, and I've got it this morning, and I'm like, I still feel, I see okay, but I still feel like there's like dirt in my eye. So I hope it's just like a temporary thing, and maybe your eye gets used to this or not, but I hope I don't have to go around feeling like there's dirt in my eye for the rest of my life. So if anybody's out there and they've got experience with these drops, let me know if that goes away. But, you know, so it could have been a better weekend is what I'm saying.
I wouldn't have expected anything else from our chat than Spinner's comment right there.
That Spinner's got
I wouldn't have expected anything else.
I should be investing in Glaucos, G-K-O-S, he says. That owns the glaucoma market.
That is so.
He's got the stock. That's the way our chat is. We got the stock. So maybe I'll buy that and I'll feel better about myself. But anyways, it's very treatable, so it's early. It's good. I just don't like the idea of having dirt in my eye for the rest of my life. So I don't think there is dirt in my eye. It just feels like there's dirt in my eye from these drops.
Is it like the drops, like when you go to the eye doctor and they do the vision? Because I know, like, when I schedule my eye appointments, I do them late in the day, because once you get those drops, you can't see a darn thing.
No, those are to dilate your eye.
Okay.
This doesn't do anything. It didn't change my view. Like, I put them in last night. I was like, oh, and my dad said the same thing with the drops. He's like, it kind of stings a little bit. It kind of feels like you got something in your eye, but I don't know. I didn't really like, man, does it go away? I didn't really ask that question. I should, because I put them in the first time last night. I'll probably ask them today. I'm like, does this dirty eye feeling go away? Because I put them in last night at 10 o'clock at night. It's 8 o'clock in the morning, and I still feel like I have dirt in my eye. So,
well,
anyways, I at least it's early. They said, you know, like, you're very treatable very early here. So, you know, and after the surgery, I might not have to do the drops anymore, they even said. So, we'll see. It's just a laser. They literally just laser my eye for like 10 seconds or something, both sides. I don't know. They're correcting something, because what it is like, there's too much pressure on your optic nerve with glaucoma, and they're trying to get the pressure off my eye. So the drops are supposed to reduce the pressure on my eye. My pressure was up to like 27 or something, and it's supposed to be like 14 to 20. So there was too much pressure, and that pressure over the course of years and years can do damage to your optic nerve. So that's all it is. They're trying to get the pressure down.
All right, I guess
Zach has it both eyes here for 20 years. Zach, do you use the drops, and does the dirty eye feeling go away? That's why it's great. You got a radio show. I can just, like, sounding board here. It's like, yeah, he still used the drops. Are you used to the drops, Zach? Because I'm not. After one day, I didn't like the drops. But I've never had a contact lens. I've never really put much in my eyes before. So I'm probably just not used to drops.
We should have been both downgraded on Friday, because I just had a wicked cold all weekend and hardly got off the couch. But anyways, we're here Monday morning. We got the markets moving. We got to get to the relevant news. And I don't think there's anything more relevant here than Boeing putting some pressure on the Dow Jones Industrial. Spencer, I'm sure everyone has the details, but give us the quick news on this.
Yeah, I myself didn't have the details. I was off the grid this weekend in Denver, but I quickly caught up when I got in the office here this morning. So, yes, we all heard about the plane crash yesterday, the second in, just under 5 months. And then the reaction to that, three countries, China, Indonesia, and Malaysia, I believe, have grounded their their Boeing fleet, essentially grounded on nearly 100 Boeing 737 MAX 8 aircrafts. A big decision there. So, and I think we're still waiting. I haven't heard or seen any comments from U.S. officials yet, but that is what's driving us down here this morning.
So you see Boeing train down. This is significant here. So obviously there's concerns that maybe the planes have something to do with this. Is this what, you know, is being?
It's the anti-stall technology. The crash had happened in October, very similar. Yeah. They left, they took off. They said, you know what, we got problems. We need to come back to the airport. And neither of those planes made it. They did change some of the technology from the other Boeings, and there were some questions about the amount of training that was needed in order to navigate this. But it's hard to talk about money and trading based on these things. The only thing I'll just give a quick technical. The initial spike low this morning was at 377.01, and after the great earnings report, you had a pair of highs near the 380 level. So, you know, you're just a reset of the earnings here. They've recovered the black box. I'll just call this whole area 377 to 380 support, because anybody that's been short this thing since the earnings report has been underwater. And then one opportunity here, they're back flat. So that's I'll reserve my technical comments to that.
I mean, you're looking at 6 days later and the thing is down 80 points from the highs. So I think you're right. I think there will be some people coming in here to buy the dip. I don't know if there's more problems going forward. That's a wild card for sure, and that's why the market is discounting it as much as it is. But I would, think that at a certain point in time, you're going to see some buy the dippers in this thing too, because before 6 days ago, this was one of the strongest stocks of the year. You know, coming from like 290 up to making new all-time highs have been incredible. If you are trading DIA, if you're trading XLI, remember Boeing is a huge part of obviously the Dow Jones. And, you know, it's price weighted, so it's going to be the biggest component as well. $382 stock. So if you look at the Dow Jones, it is trading down here this morning with the other markets up. That's why. It's because of Boeing. XLI, same thing. I think XLI, I could go look it up quick. I think it's over 10%.
Yeah, it's 11. It's 11%.
11% Boeing. So you see XLI again trading down. So just Boeing, you go down 9.5%. Take that, 1% of XLI is just Boeing. So, and then obviously, you know, there could be some, I don't know if there's going to be much sympathy moving with this, but you do see UTX trading down, United Technologies. You're seeing a lot of, you're seeing a few stocks trade down. So just caution here if you're trading here this morning, obviously off this Boeing news. Let's go and look at a few other things. And we got a deal here this morning that we need to talk about. And is this a done deal, NVIDIA buying MLNX, or is this still a rumor?
Nope.
It's a done deal? What's up, Spencer?
Nope, it looks done here. Okay. Mellanox, MLNX, being acquired by NVIDIA for $125 a share, per share in cash. So yep. It comes out to about $7 billion as your total price there. But $125 is the takeout price here for MLNX.
I actually was short some NVIDIA overnight, and it was trading down the 147 handle on this. And I came in, and I was like, I actually saw it, you know, from my bed. I'm like just getting, looking at my app. I usually go to my CNBC app, and I was like, they're going to knock 3 points off this for this. I heard the deal last night. I'm like, that's too much. So then I actually came up, got on my computer, and I covered. Thank goodness I did. 147.5, I covered some, and then 148.5. The thing's 152.60. So I don't know. They automatically want to hit all the acquirers, but first of all, this is a big size deal. But you know, when you put market cap perspective on it, NVIDIA's market cap, if I just go grab it, is $91 billion, and MLNX market cap is, do you have it in front of you, Spencer? Before the deal, it was around $5.9 billion, so it's probably about $7 or $8 billion. So when you put it in perspective, it's a big deal for them. Yeah, 10% of the market cap, but it's not an enormous deal. But it's a big deal. But they're not even paying, like, I don't think the premium being paid here is outrageous. You know, we've seen some deals where they buy smaller companies and pay a 50% premium. I mean, you're talking about a 10% premium. It's not an outrageous premium to pay. So, you know, logic's saying, I think NVIDIA got a pretty good deal. So, and I think the market is now saying that as well, because NVIDIA was trading down. How low did we get, Joel? I saw, like I said, I covered some in the 147s. The rest are in the 148s.
Got as low as 147.05.
So I think I was like 147.75.
Yeah.
I think I was covered. I just go, look, yeah, 147.75 and 148.75. So it was good, obviously good that I got covered. And I just happen to be short overnight. You know, I do these overnight trades. I'm doing hedging and doing different things. I was, you know, long some other stocks against it, but some other semi stocks against it. But so it worked out. But I'm glad I came in, and I'm glad, you know, I did analyze that last night. And I thought they might initially hit it. I expected that it might go down just because they seem to hit the acquirers. But anyway, so it worked out because now it's trading up.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, you're getting a nice pop here. NVIDIA is trading at the highs of the pre-market session, which is 153.50. I'll look at it from support area. You cleared a pair of highs at, let's call it 150, 130. So that's your support if you go back into reverse. And then your three-day high is not up to 156.50. So pretty wide open here in NVIDIA. MLNX trading. What's the takeout price you said? 125?
125, that's it.
A little bit of a discount here, Dennis, or I see it up $9.50 here.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
So, again, I don't think there's probably going to be many issues here, though. So, it's a 120. Is it cash? That's another question. Is it cash?
Let me confirm that. I believe so. But
okay. It's trading, yes, like it's cash. It's cash. Not moving around a lot.
It is cash, straight cash.
That's a pretty good discount. You're right, Joel. Like on some of these deals, like I would not think you're going to have issues here. Maybe they think there is going to be an issue or two here. At least the risk arbs are saying that. It's 120, not 125.
Yeah, 125.
Yeah, because that's trading like it's 120. So they're saying there's obviously a little bit of risk, but I don't know. I look at that. It wasn't even a huge premium paid here. So, I mean, if the deal didn't go through, it falls back to 109. I mean, actually, from a risk arb perspective, I'm very surprised they're putting a 6-point discount on that. So I would think maybe it's going to take a while. Did they give like a timeline? Is it going to be a long, drawn-out affair? Because you obviously have the time value of money to consider as well now, which is something, you know, that we never had to consider, you know, a couple of years ago. But as interest rates have come up, you've got to consider the time value of money to a certain extent as well. So there's always going to be a little discount for the time value of money. But risk arbs will put an extra discount on if they think there's a chance a deal doesn't go through. Just logic, pretty small deal. I would think there's not going to be any antitrust issues or anything here. So
no, I don't think so.
I'm very surprised 6-point discount.
What about reaction this morning in Intel? Because they were the ones that were outbid.
And Intel's just kind of trading flat. So I still own Intel long-term portfolio. It's actually one of my biggest positions because I had an Intel position and I added more to it. I don't usually do that, but I added more to it when I had the earnings dip. And it was a good call and it's moved straight up. I'm averaging around $49. So it's a fairly recent position for me in the last year, Intel. But yeah, it's just kind of hanging out. I don't really think they don't seem to care too much. I mean, it's 52.64, so it's not like they're hitting it because it got outbid.
And there was a positive piece in Barron's over the weekend on Intel.
Oh, just, okay, so that's going to help out.
Yeah, just new management coming in and, you know, the potential for the company. So just hanging out up 8 cents at 52.56. That has had a nice move. I haven't looked at the Intel chart in a while. Let me see if I can see anything here on
the value tech has been back in favor. Cisco, yep. Intel, the value tech, and spinners and talk about in the chat too has been back in favor. So an Intel had a nice run. They had the earnings disappointment where they knocked it down from 50 to 46. That got bought within 5 days, was almost back. And it continues to get bought. And 54, I believe when it hit 54 was actually, I don't know, it wasn't quite a new 52. We got up to 57.60 back in last spring, or actually I guess it was June, so almost the start of summer. But you know, you put it in perspective, what's the all-time high in Intel? Like we were back in the 80s, or it was 75, I'm guessing 75, year 2000, so going back 19 years ago.
Let's see what we got here.
Isn't that funny though? 19 years you invested. If you bought in that tech bubble, you still haven't got your money back. So don't just think you can always buy, you know, when you get something really frothy, sometimes it takes a long time to get your money back.
Pretty good, Dennis. 75.69.
Yeah, so I never had Intel, but again, just like I never had it back during the financial crisis or anything. But wow, you know, you just think about how long you've taken, and here it's still down 30% from the highs that it made in the year 2000. So 19 years later, you're still fighting to get your money back. So don't buy in bubbles. Moral of the story. I did another. So I put Intel recently in my long-term portfolio. But you know what I put in my long-term portfolio Friday was a stock I've talked about for a long time, and Citron talked me right into it. It's Tesla. I added it to the long-term portfolio, half-size position, because I can't stomach a full-size position in Tesla. And you know what? I like the candle. I like the fact that Citron's getting behind it. I'm gonna give it a short leash. So this isn't like a long-term forget about it. I'm gonna try to hold it, but we know I haven't been able to stomach it in the past. Can I stomach it this time? I don't know. But I was talking to my buddy Chris Bannier too, and he's just like, he's such a Musk fan. He's like, this guy is just a genius. You know, and he's just talking about, you know, the cars, how, you know, the cars are awesome. So I'm back in. I got to talk back in. I'm back in Tesla.
All right, Spencer, do you want to give they had some news as usual?
Well, I this isn't the first. I feel like we've done this dance before with Dennis and Tesla. So, like, so why are you doing this again? Why again?
Why am I in Tesla again?
Yes,
because when I don't own it, I want to own it, and when I do own it, I don't want to own it in the long term portfolio. So I just keep thinking the short thesis has a lot of holes in it. And this is what my buddy Chris said too. He's like, the whole short thesis is they're burning cash like crazy and they're not going to be able to continue to burn cash. Well, they, you know, yeah, they may not make money this quarter, but they already shown a profit here the quarter before, a pretty good one. And he's like talking about the projected numbers, and he's like, they're projected to make like $12 out, you know, in a year or two. I mean, the whole thesis is that they're burning cash and they're not doing it anymore. They're not really burning cash like they used to. You know, and Musk is going to get this plant going in China. There's just so many irons on the fire. Think about what that guy does. I mean, it's incredible with the SpaceX program, with this. I mean, I was reading a tweet and, you know, everybody wants to hate on Elon Musk. Who the hell does more than Elon Musk? I mean, yeah, you know, maybe he, you know, shoots his mouth off too much. But think about the accomplishments that this guy has. And if this is the way to invest with him, maybe it is, but, and maybe it's just, you know, these cars are, maybe it's too, it's always been a valuation issue for me. I mean, if it was a good valuation, I don't think I'd have a problem. But if you start thinking they can make $12, $13, $14 a share, then the valuation isn't as big of a deal. It's like starting to look like it's not that expensive. So, you know, 20 times, you know, that's all of a sudden reasonable. So I don't know. I just think, you know, we've kind of meandered here for years. The short thesis has a lot of holes in it now. The cars are pretty awesome. I mean, I think eventually this thing's going to be, and I've said it on the show, I think eventually it's going to be over $400.
Quote the Raven, or Chris Irons, aka Quote the Raven, who's been on our show before. He's a friend of the program, friend of Benzinga. He wrote something over the weekend that I thought was interesting. He's generally speaking bearish in general, but he specifically is very bearish Tesla. And he did a pretty good job of thought, just outlining why.
What's this?
Quote the Raven.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, you need to.
He's always bearish Tesla.
Yes,
I follow him on Twitter. He's a fun follow because he's got a lot of
big
he's like eternal bear.
He's big bear, and just separating the ideology from, in his words, separating the ideology from the investment, and you can still support green energy and autonomous driving, but it doesn't have to be via Tesla. There are other ways to do it, and that's sort of his piece there. But you should check it out. It's on Seeking Alpha. I read it over the weekend there. Tesla got some comments from Andrew Left on Friday. I don't know. These aren't particularly insightful comments to me. He said he sees it going back to 320. Well, I mean, it's sure. It's been in this range. Also, the fact that Tesla is going to have to raise their vehicle prices. It's funny that they just announced a $35,000 Model 3 last week or 2 weeks ago, and then now here they are having to raise prices. They're not going to raise the Model 3 price. It's going to stay at $35,000, the base model there, but they're going to raise their other prices by about 3% on average worldwide.
It got hit. Obviously, the announcement that they made was disappointing, you know, and they popped it up about 10, 15 points ahead of the announcement. I think I priced all that in now. And I think as you get lower, I think there's just people, you know, 250, 260. If you get down to there, you have huge support. I don't know if you're going to get there, though. That's why I was like, you know, I take a half-size position. Maybe I'll add the whole position if it gets back to the 250, 260 area. But it's a story, and I think the story is going to come back here. And really, you know, and I know Tim Seymour's been saying this on CNBC for a long time. He's like, Tesla's gone nowhere for basically the last 5 years. And that's right. I mean, it was up at 250 back in 2014. But Joel, you might be able to comment to this. Remember, we've seen stocks. What they do is they have huge run-ups, and then they digest those run-ups sometimes for years. I mean, Walmart was the same thing. Walmart, you know, had run-ups so far, and then it took 10 years of digestion till it basically come down to a reasonable valuation again before it started to take off. I'm not saying Tesla's at a reasonable valuation, but if it starts to make 10, 12, 14 bucks a share, that short thesis goes out the window. And I don't know if those projections are correct, but you can go and look at them, and they're there. I know the Guggenheim analyst at one time said that he sees them making as much as $20, I believe, by 2021. I mean, you start talking, they're making money like that, it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, and we're getting a question in the YouTube chat. So the showrooms are closing or not? And what it is they're slowing the pace of closing the showroom. So a lot of mixed signals.
Do they need the showrooms? Maybe this is smart. Like, why do they need those expenses for? If people are going to start buying. You know why they aren't going to need the showrooms as much either? And Jason Raznick makes this point too. We should bring Jason back on the show sometime. Is eventually you're going to start seeing a lot of these cars on the road. You're starting to see them pop up. And then that's just advertising with, you know, free advertising for them. Once everybody starts seeing these cars, because, you know, I've seen those cars at Somerset Mall. They are awesome looking. I've sat in that car. That's one of the coolest cars I've ever sat in my life. And the price is not outrageous. So once they're on the road, people are going to say, whoa, what's that? Now they say, oh, I can get that car for, you know, 35 or for, well, you're not going to get, you know, the base price 35, but say I get that car for 50,000 bucks. They might create some more demand just from people seeing the cars. So maybe they don't need the showrooms.
We'll see what I mean.
I'm a Tesla bull.
You are?
I've been for a while. I've wanted to own the stock for a while. I think it's pulled back enough that I'm taking a shot. And maybe I'm going to be wrong. Like I said, half-size position because it is somewhat speculative. Yeah, they're still burning some cash here right now. Maybe Musk is going to shoot off his mouth next week and the stock's going to tank again. I mean, that's the wild card risk. But Gene Munster, too, huge Tesla bull. I mean, it's one of his biggest positions with Loop in his fund, is it not?
Yep. Yep. I'll just say.
I'll tell you something. Gene Munster, he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, you follow him over the course of time. I think the best thing you could say technically at this is that in early 2018, you made a pair of monthly lows, let's call it 246. Then the next time you came down there, you put a couple monthly lows in at the 50 area. Now, I don't know if this is going to be monthly lows here, but at least on the daily, you got a double bottom. Well, you have 270.10 low, and then buyers stepped up to 274 the last two sessions. So support is moving up. So maybe all those people waiting for 250, 260, 270 are upping their bids now. So, I mean, for the short term, 270.10 is a great level to lean on.
And that might be my stop out. Like I said, I had a short leash on it. Maybe I'm going to stop out on this. I put it in the long-term portfolio, so I just don't have it in front of me. But it's still in there, and it's in my mind. And I know I traded out of it. So it's kind of a long-term, but it's kind of a trade too. So it might be one of those. It's one of those that it's probably the opposite of what most people do, is that I have a long-term portfolio, but I'm going to stop out if it gets ugly. But if it can start running, I might just stick with it. And I mean, I've had some trades turn into long-term investments in the good way. You never want a trade to turn into a long-term investment because you're hoping to get your money back. But sometimes a trade just works out so well. Alibaba, for instance, was a trade when I first got into it. And I stuck with some extra shares. And now I'm sitting up and, you know, I'm up 35 points in the thing. So, I mean, you can hold on to the things longer. It starts getting really your way, and then you can get more comfortable with it too. And especially when you can take out your initial capital. Sometimes, you know, if you got like, you know, 500 shares or something, you sell four and maybe you made like 10 or 15 or 20% on something, you can hold on to 100 for free. It's always nice when you're playing with the house's money.
Let's just talk for Andrew's boy right now. He wants to take a look at ZS. I don't see any news on this, nor have I ever heard of the stock.
Oh, no, it trades. Yeah, I trade it.
Zscaler?
That thing moves. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That
moves.
That's a mover.
It makes scales?
Yes. No, it's... Spencer, can you tell us exactly what Zscaler? It moves with all like the cloud stuff and that. Is,
yeah,
it cloud
stuff? That's exactly right. It's a cloud name. This is one of the.
I have it. Like it always moves around with the cloud.
Yeah,
stocks.
This is like, I think about.
Oh, it moves.
Like Splunk, I think Workday, I think Zscaler. It seemed like in my mind, it's like it's in the Splunk Workday club.
We got to bring my buddy Chris Bandy on because he was just talking about Zscaler with me over the weekend there too. And he's like, this is one of those that just moves. It's one of his biggest positions right now. And I tell you, Chris does well too. He does hardcore analysis, like he chartered financial analyst. So he's crunching numbers and figuring stuff out. And then he just uses the technicals to time when he's going to get in. He wants the story. He wants the uptrend. He likes them when they're breaking out. And the Zscaler has been one of his biggest positions for a long time. So he's doing really well with this one.
Real quick, it is trading near the high of the move. The high of the move is 61.64. But there's just a couple odd lots here. So I don't see if there's news associated with it. Less than a couple hundred shares have traded. So keep an eye. I mean, the only thing you'd say is after 61.64, this is in full breakout mode, no resistance. But just a quick note that it's up on light volume. Big number coming up here, Dennis. You better go wide on your markets here for 1 second.
What's the number?
Retail sales numbers coming out here. And
move?
I don't know if it's going to move. It moved last month. I just didn't want you to get picked off.
All right, I'm leaving.
Okay. All right.
Well, remember that last month's reading was due to the shutdown. Last month, the last reading we got was for December, which was weaker than expected. I don't know what we're getting. We're getting January right now. And let's see.
Up 2 points.
Let's see what the number is.
Some movement.
We're waiting.
You guys talk. I'm
I'm just sort of waiting here for.
We're all waiting too. So's Ranger Rick.
Yeah.
All right, but I like to watch.
It's already calmed down. So I was expecting. I was like, oh, we just rallied people. Maybe we're gonna go, and now we're already back. So it looks like it looks like a non.
All right, that's
a non event. We're almost back to where we were. Yeah, so we'll watch it. We're getting a little bit of chop though, a little bit of chop off that number. So thanks for letting me know. I didn't even realize that number was coming out.
Well, yeah, that's not gonna a number like that, like 0.2% is not gonna, you know, move the market.
Right.
No, not. I mean, but that number that they had before really moved it. So just wanted to give you a heads up there. Up 2% versus unchanged. So not a big factor here in the market. So let's just get it over with. Let's just talk about the shipping stocks here real quick. Every few months, you know, it's actually been a while. They've been kind of dormant, but what's getting this latest?
There is something to do with financing, like a financing deal. I don't honestly know the details too much. The one thing I always urge caution when looking at these names, because you're right, Joel. Every few months they do all tend to run up together. They all have very low floats. GLBS in particular.
You're talking GLBS, the one moving this morning.
Yeah, GLBS has a 1.5 million share float. So, you know, even if there is news. News or no news, it's just easy to manipulate.
It's got to be sounds up 100%. So
I mean,
it blasted off. It started taking off on Friday. We do say it seems like every like 6 months or so, these things blast off and go up like 50%. At least one of them do. So there's a group of them, like, and there's probably like a dozen of these things that really move all not together, but they all move. Well, one starts moving, the other one starts moving. I'm not following the story at all, so I'm not sure if there is news here, if this is just something going on, but I can tell you the other ones are moving here too. ESEA is trading up 27% from 66 cents up to 85 cents. Tops, a lot of these are penny stocks. Tops is up from 89 cents to a buck. DCIX is another one. It's trading up 15%. Sino, S-I-N-O, is another one. It's up 12%. Dryships is the one that's followed the most, and it's a thicker one, I guess, of all these things. It's trading up 4.6% here this morning. So I'm not sure if there's a headline here for GLBS or this is flat-out short squeeze, but it seems like about every 6 months or so, we get a wicked short squeeze in this. And you can look at the charts and see the wicked spikes. So it's like these things meander for a while, and then all of a sudden they get a short squeeze. So I think that's why you're seeing this one.
Again, even if there is news, which I've not seen a specific headline, but, you know, headline or no headline, again, easy to manipulate, not that hard for.
Oh, I think a lot of these little stocks like this are manipulated.
Yes,
for sure.
That's what I'm. Yes, I completely agree.
So if you're chasing these, it seems like when the dust settles and you look at them a month later, they go right back down. So don't stick this one in your long term portfolio. Don't look at it. Trade these. Don't invest in these ones.
For GLBS, the initial pop took it up to 10.55. 10.60, and you're kind of peeling back here and since you hit that level. So if you're looking for, you know, 15 or 20, boom, you want to see this thing rally up, take out that pre-market high at 10.55 and just keep on going. It's a reverse split stock, so hard to find good levels in it, but I call 10.60 the pre-market high. Better get through that in a heartbeat. Do we just get some Tesla news, more Tesla news here?
There's the money.
Yeah, what happened here?
Something's moving. I don't know if there's a Tesla headline, but it just dropped. It was up $3 and now it's dropped down. So
now you want to sell it?
Now I can't stomach it. Sell. No. Try not to look at it here, at least until it gets under 270. We'll see if it gets under. It starts making a low. I might get nervous on it.
We had an S3 come through, but I'm looking very quickly.
Always hard on the fly when you're doing a radio show live to analyze the new news,
especially trying to go through a filing. It's like a needle in a
haystack.
But
he's done something.
I don't know. I mean, we had an S3 come out at 8:30.
Yeah, I mean it. We'll see. I mean, the stock always has news on it. So
there's always news on Tesla.
Yeah,
it's wild. You're in it. It's wild. And, you know, it has its periods lull, but it seems like it's wild. Obviously, something just came out bad because it's down $2. So maybe we can get stopped at this very, very quickly.
Wait a minute. Is this an offer? What is this, an offering? What?
No, they filed.
The filing very quickly here. Right. So yeah,
I'm not going to go through that.
I don't have it in front of me. I'm not trying
to. Okay. All right. All right.
We'll see.
Okay.
It could be because it's going straight down.
Yeah. One thing we didn't really hit on this morning when talking about the Boeing news was the reaction to the airline stocks. They're all kind of getting hit here. Last I checked, at least American was down, Southwest was down. I hadn't seen Delta.
American is down. Yeah, Southwest is significantly down. Delta holding up for some reason. It's not down. So I don't know. Maybe because is Delta mostly domestic? Is that why?
It could be.
Well, Southwest is too.
Southwest is domestic, right?
Yeah. So an LUV is trading down. I don't know. LUV is trading down a buck, but Delta is actually trading up. So I'm not sure if somebody uses. Does Delta not use Boeing planes or something?
Well, Delta got some positive ink over the weekend.
Okay, there you go. Joel's always got the news.
Strong tailwinds can drive Delta stock higher. Andrew Barry makes the case that if Warren wants to buy an airline, it would be Delta. Shares the best managed airline in the United States, and they trade cheaply. So there's your reason for Delta. You know, let's just trade it up a little bit with the other airlines news. But I don't know. You think Mr. Buffett would buy an airline? Do you think with all those?
Well, he's in. What is he in right now? Which ones he got?
He's in a few of them.
He's in like two or three of them. I think he's in UAL, isn't he?
Yeah, let me check.
I don't know how to take him private, but he's in. He's American. Got, I think, three. I know he's in Southwest. He's in Southwest. He's been in Southwest for years, I feel like.
He's in, let me see real quickly what he's in. He is in Delta. He is in Southwest. And
Real?
I think just those. He's in United.
Yeah.
And those three. Those are the three.
Yeah, those are three. Delta, United, and Southwest. I mean, and he's been in Southwest forever. I think Delta recently added to it. So, I don't know. Buffett likes him.
Okay. All right. S&P's are
up. Some of these airlines, you got to consider this too, is, I mean, these things were flying, no pun intended, and they stalled out there, and they really haven't, like, had the January, February that a lot of the other stocks have. I mean, Delta, you kind of started the year around $48, and it's, like, right there, $49. So, if you're looking for something that hasn't moved, it's these, but I don't know. When we're getting all this bad news from Boeing and stuff, it makes me nervous to own an airline.
Yeah, Boeing continues to fall here. We are now
$50.
What'd you say?
$50. It's down.
Hold. I mean, it's, you know, if you're short this thing, I mean, you know, maybe pounding on it with some offers here and getting it lower.
I think the people who are along this thing are pounding the bids. Is what
you think? Yep.
Yeah, because think about how much money was made here. So you've got, let's think about, put yourself as an investment manager. And we know the real money moves, and even a retail, you know, they get enough of them, they're in there. But, you know, long-term, you know, movement is caused by big money managers. And they bought this thing maybe on the dip, and they're in from 300 early in the year or 320. The thing's had an incredible two-month run. And now you get this, you know, significantly scary news. You're probably ringing the register and saying, look, I want to get the hell out and actually book these profits because I don't want these to go away. So I think this is going to be, I think it's going to bounce back. Unless we get another plane crash again, then there's going to be major issues. But I think eventually you're going to get a bounce here and maybe look for it. We know a lot of times these things tend to turn. You know, you get the open where everybody wants the hell out, and then you get maybe a little follow through after the open for people who are just buying the dip at the open. But it seems like around 10 o'clock, these things sometimes start to catch a bid and start to turn. So if you're day trading this thing, look for the 10 o'clock turn. That's my opinion.
I think another statistic that I saw this morning was that, you know, Boeing has been significantly upping the amount of planes that they've been producing of this particular type. And I think at this point they're scheduled to produce like 59 a month. So this is an area where they've gone into heavily, right? For their R&D and where they're pumping their money. So if there are significant problems here, it does change the story here for Boeing. We are now getting into that gap area from earnings. Yeah, so if you're looking for that gap fill from January 29th, you're within earshot here. That would take you down to 367.78. That was your high that created a 13-point gap. In the issue between 380.50 and 367.78. So there's your next support level here if you're looking for a gap fill in Boeing Airlines.
Lily's going down here this morning. Is something, yeah. Lily? Gotta be something. Joel, you see something, Spencer?
Yeah, Joel had asked me right before this show started. They did have some news. You know what it is? They have a few things today, but as far as their acquisition of Elanco, the share exchange ratio that's going through today. I don't know if that would have an effect on the stock. So Elanco shareholders are
there's a couple SEC filings too, though. Is that all be related to Elanco?
It could. It. I'm not.
Oh, sure. It did go through. Elanco did spin it off. Yeah, it's a spin off there. Is that full? That's.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
They spun through. Spun off the rest of it now. Is that it? Because obviously we know ELAN was, you know, the spinoff. It was a spinoff from Millie, right? ELAN?
Yeah. Yes.
And they had a bunch of other shares. So it's probably something to do with that.
Right.
So maybe and you got so the rest it, of your so Elanco
it's
or something.
Point, it's full
so
point.
So it may not even be down. It might just be adjusting from, you know, the spinoff of the shares.
Yes.
Good point. ELAN.
And I see that ELAN is trading up $1.15 here. So probably, no significant news there. Probably just some reorg going on in that stock. S&P's at the highs of the pre-market session. We just ticked 59.25, currently trading at 27.58. As I said at the top of the show, no real resistance to talk about here in the 27.50 or the 27.60 handle. Got a weekly number at 27.68 and interday high from Thursday, 27.73. So market rebounding nicely from Friday's sell-off at this point.
Got a lot of ratings, and we haven't touched on them yet. There's some big ones here this morning. Spencer, give us some highlights, and then we'll jump into some charts.
Let's just go one by one because there's so many. And let's just start with the big gun here. Apple is catching an upgrade from Bank of America, I believe. That is correct. And they're upgrading then to Buy Apple.
Let's talk Apple just for a second. Here's a big move for Apple, up $3. But you know what? It wanted a vote of confidence. It had a little bit of a rough morning. Again, and, you know, people were talking on Friday. If you see what I tweeted out Friday night, everybody's talking, you know, what a bad week it was for the markets. But I was like, did we not turn Friday like in most of these stocks? Like if you look at the individual charts, sometimes just don't take a step. You can take a step back and say, yeah, it was a bad week. But, I mean, Apple was under $170 right after the open. And it rallied up to 173. And if you look at every other tech stock, I mean, just even look at the Qs. You know, we had a nice rally there too. We had a pretty good rally. You know, even though a lot of stocks didn't close higher on Friday, a lot of them got all of their losses back. And we were down significantly. So it felt like a turning point on Friday. And we are getting follow through, obviously, here this morning with that. I mean, Alibaba too. Check this one out. You know, it got, you know, slaughtered off the hop, was down significantly, and they bought the thing all day, and now it's coming right back up here again, so it got down 171. So you got to be quick in this market, and everybody was talking bearish Friday night. I know on Fast Money, they were all bearish on Friday night. I was like, I feel like that they are not looking at, you know, we already had the turn. I wasn't getting that, so I tweeted out. I said, and I don't remember what my tweet was, and I can go read it, but you know, Friday's a long time ago, and I've got glaucoma and everything since then. So you're trying to, it was a busy weekend. But I said, I know it was a rough week, but today felt like a victory for the bulls.
Most stocks
closed significantly off the lows. And I actually tweeted that at CNBC Fast Money because every person on CNBC Fast Money was bearish. And I'm like, man, I just feel like I'm almost bullish here right now. And you know, I wish I would have bought more stocks. I obviously bought Tesla, which was apparently the wrong one because the stock's still trading. Well, it's gotten down.
Yeah, it's back.
It's back. But anyways, I feel like we turned. I feel like we give you a little chance and we turned here again. So you know what? Apple, the same thing. You know, and this is like the Jeremy Newsom style of trading too. It goes down, takes a low, starts to turn, stops a few people out, and all of a sudden you're right back up. So now you actually can move higher here. So I don't mind this upgrade from what I'm getting to is – you know, I think Bank of America might have good timing on this upgrade of Apple.
Pursuant to the upgrade, I don't know when the last significant upgrade we've had to Apple was. Like, I think we have to go back several years to find.
It's been a while since we had a big call on Apple. Think
about it.
Go to the pro. When is the last time Apple got an upgrade to buy?
I'm telling you, I'm in the pro. And there are so many. There are so many analysts that are already have their buy ratings, right? And you know, a number of them are neutral too. Bank America.
Well, that's a good point too. It's hard to upgrade a stock when you're already at a buy.
Right. But like Goldman Sachs, you know, they have a hold. Jefferies has a hold. KeyBank, I believe, has a hold. But we haven't had an upgrade to, let alone an upgrade to buy, from a notable firm like this. I think it's been a couple of years, honestly. I really
Wow, that's crazy. I did not know that either, but I'm just going from my head.
It's been
a long time.
I can't
think of the last time we were talking about an Apple upgrade to buy.
Right.
Isn't that funny? Because everybody's already at buy on it.
Yeah, you can't upgrade overweight, can't upgrade buy, can't upgrade outperform. I guess you could
go buy to strong buy, or you can go buy. Yeah. Some of them do conviction less.
Super buy or whatever. But I guess you can do that. There are degrees of buying, I suppose. But this is really big. This is the biggest upgrade we've had from Apple in quite some time.
All right. Let's break it down, because I was looking at the chart at this one over the weekend, and it really has been in a solid trading range, and it got near the bottom of that range on Friday. You had 170 to 175, and I was thinking, man, is this thing maybe we're going to go back down and work our way lower and try and fill the gap? But then I like to go to a longer term perspective, and I went to the monthly chart. And you hit that all-time high of 233.47, and then you dropped 90 points to 142. So this really hasn't even had a significant 50% retracement of that break. And that retracement's not up to 188 here. That's, that's only 12 points away. So I don't know. It could be really very, very good timing here. On this upgrade, there's really not much in here after you take out. You did have the high. Former high of the move is 177.75. We haven't hit that yet. So keep an eye on that as a potential target today. S&Ps continue to move higher in the session, up 750, just hits 2760. And, so that's why I'm looking at it. I don't know if I want to buy it up 3.25 points here in Apple, but
still pull back, maybe get some profit takers, get down to like 175. Maybe that's where you take a shot. So I still got a long-term portfolio. So,
And then sticking with the big guns here for ratings this morning, Nomura is active. They're upgrading.
Oh, very, very.
Upgrading Facebook this morning to buy and raising their price target from 172 to 215 in Facebook.
Wow. Still got this one in the long-term portfolio there, too. I had it on for a trade-in investment, sold the trade. I don't know what it was. It was kind of a trade investment, one of those, but I sold a good chunk of it. So not playing with entirely the house's money, but I sold like 2/3 of the position. So playing with a good chunk of the house's money, because we know it's buying back the 140s. So it's $172. It's come a long ways back here. I'm torn, because you look at that 125 and you think, wow, you're really chasing it, but you've kind of consolidated for a while here now. So can this take off to 180? Absolutely it can. I mean, now you've got your hard stop would be down probably at the low of the move, 159.59. So if you're buying it there, you're 13 points off the lows, and you almost got to hold it because the bull thesis is intact until that's taken out. So you're paying up a little bit for it. But if I was long, which I am, I'd be holding.
The high of the rebound has been 173.57. We're only $1.30 away from that. And what's nice about this one, your January high, 171.68, your February high, 172.47, and now so far your March high has been 173.57. So it's working its way, back in to fill. What's a 50% here? We hit, let's call it 220. Wow, did this get all the way down to 128.56? Is that correct?
It did.
Wow, 90-point moves.
Everybody was throwing in the towel.
Wow.
The PE got down. Like, the PE was in the teens at that point in time.
Yeah.
I don't know if Facebook's ever had a PE in the teens.
185 would be mid-range on that, so still considerable upside. I will forward today, though, and today only – well, maybe not today only. 173.57, that was your high on Wednesday. High close of the move is 172.51, so I will keep an eye on that. That was your close on Wednesday. I guess I got kind of lucky last week, because I did sell some credit call spreads after this thing had a big run up there. I thought it might stall in the 170s. And I also had a few puts on, and I didn't cover them on the open. And if you didn't cover a lot of stuff on the open on Friday, man, you were toast. I mean, after the open, I mean, it did have one other.
It gave you about a half hour, and they took off.
Yeah, it did. It did.
It turned. The market turned. The 10 o'clock turn. The market turned at that point in time. So now, if you're coming in, you're paying up a little bit. I mean, Facebook got down to $165. And you know what? And I almost pulled the trigger on more NVIDIA. I have NVIDIA in the long-term portfolio, and I was looking at it in at around 10 o'clock, and it was like 146, and I was like, man, I should add to this. And just in the long-term portfolio. And, you know, I wish I would have. It's 153 here this morning. So, I mean, it was giving you a good shot. You had a 4 or 5 day down move there. That was the little pullback to buy, in my opinion. I think we could, you know, start to, you know, it's not going to be straight up from here or anything like that, but I'm a buyer of pullbacks. I got the bull hat on. The bull hat is on.
All right. And as buyer I mentioned, pullbacks. Okay. As I mentioned last week, you did have the rollover from the March to the June contract. You do see some, you know, kind of, you know, different trading action, and you could create gaps in the market. And that's what you saw. I mean, if I had an opinion, I'd say someone sold out of their marches early in the week, you know, Friday or, you know, the prior week, Friday, Monday, Tuesday, and they just sat back and watched the market fall and then picked up the Junes at a huge discount to the prevailing spread. We are going into a quad, which we all know that, you know, expirations or, you know, turning points in the market, your December expiration marked a turning point. Here we are in March. And it's funny, we had Rachel on Friday, and she made a good call besides her place call. She goes, yeah, no, market looks down and everything. And we were trading, I don't know, 2730, 2735. She was like, you know what? They just might run this thing back up just to 2800 before expiration. Just, you know, just to get everyone that sold last week, you know. So expirations, just keep in mind, you have that quad witch on Friday. Major turning points in the market, and right now looks like the bulls are fighting back. We'll see what the pre-market high is, and if we can continue through that pre-market high that's currently 2760.
Long tangents. We're still on ratings.
I know. That was me.
No, that's okay. I do it all the time, so you're allowed every once in a while, Joel. I mean, I go on the tangents more than anybody. We know that.
Nomura, so they're upgrading Facebook this morning. They are downgrading Oracle to reduce, and they're lowering their price target there to $42.
That's equivalent to sell. Stock is trading down a dollar on this. It seems like every time Oracle pulls back, it's buying opportunity. I've had Oracle in the long-term portfolio for a decade or more, maybe even like 15 years. And I'm averaged in from, I don't know, like 12 or 13 bucks. I actually sold some of it back in December when I was getting nervous about the overall market. I sold around like 48. And here you are. It just comes back, man. I wish I wouldn't have sold any. Because, you know, obviously I had to pay the capital gains. I got nervous in December. So, you know, I had a little gain I got to pay on it now. And I wish I still had it all. So I still got a good chunk of Oracle. But I sold, I think, almost half the position. So disappointed that I got spooked out. And you know what? Oracle's back.
We are off the pre-market.
It's low. Down dollars.
Yeah. It's down a buck or two. You hit 51.50, and it just seems like someone's being pretty patient in that area, because all your lows since that 51.50 have been between 51.50 and 51.70. You have a daily low that comes in at 51.57. So, boom, holds 51.50. They'll fade. Oh, another low at 51.50. Holy mackerel. A lot of support there. So if you're looking for more downside, you want to crush through that 51.50 and get under 51 in a heartbeat. On the upside, in order to fill the gap, you're not that far away. You actually had three lows at 52.20. So if you're trying for a scalp here, old support, new resistance, keep an eye on that. Above that high close for the move yesterday, and that might be an all-time closing high at 52.77.
No, another
what
one
else is, you got, Spencer?
Yeah, we got a lot. FireEye this morning catching an upgrade from JP Morgan to overweight.
It's a stock I've won. What's Sean Udall say about this one? He's on FireEye. He's been in it for a while, hasn't he?
Yeah. Yep. He's still in it.
This is one of those that you just trade. And it seems like every time it gets down to 15s and it gets eventually back up over like 18 and then it comes back down. It's one of those, I guess, you know, you start getting under $15, which you did on Friday again, get down to 1587. It's a buy. Obviously, lucky, you know, because it got the upgrade if you did buy it. But I don't know. It seems to be buyers in like the 15, 16 handle. Eternal buyers down there.
And I mean, it's been one of the stocks in the sector that really hasn't, you know,
it hasn't been a good one. Because you think like CYBR, Palo Alto Networks, I mean, these things have, you know, had really good, like, let's look at the monthly performances here. And Palo Alto Networks, take us back to like 2015, has went from $100 to $234. CYBR, which is maybe one of the best ones now, back to like 2016, $40 to $106. FireEye, in that same time period, from 2015, it was $40 to $16. So obviously, you know, they've done something not right compared to their competitors. So you're buying the dog of the sector. That's the only thing.
Yeah. And let's see here. We're trading up by 65 cents. We did. Oh, haven't snuck over $17 yet. $16.90 stands as your pre-market high. What do you have here? You got a daily high right there at $16.93. That's only 18 cents away. So I'll keep an eye on that. As resistance here, if you're looking for a pullback, closed way down at 16.10, a couple closes in the lower 16 handle. So that'd be your support. But with an up market here, I don't know if you're going to get a chance to buy that one. Unchanged today, still updating Boeing. I just want to see what the low is here in Boeing. Your low was just made on the last bracket at 370, and now you're a few points
down
above
over 50
it.
Bucks, down 48. Yeah. Wow, right. There's a lot of people getting hurt on that today because there's been a lot of Boeing bulls out there. So when it drops 48 points in one day, there is some people getting stopped out and there is some people getting hit hard.
Yeah, there could be some big stops on the open on this one, huh, Dennis? If you think about how far it's fallen, you know, like some people are thinking, oh, I'll put my stop at 400. I got nothing to worry about. And kaplooey, here you are. But we'll see, keeping an eye on that pre-market low. I have to call the pre-market low down to that gap area, 367.78. Of course, much will be dependent. I guess they have recovered the black box from the flight. So information from that will be very important. Yeah.
Very important. And I mean, you make a good point. You know, some people probably are in this and it's been trending and they're saying, okay, if it ever falls under 400, I'm going to stop out. A lot of, you know, times, you know, you have people in this situation and they don't know what to do. They're like, well, my stop was at 400. It's a 374. Well, I can't sell down here because I'm losing too much money. That is how you make a trade become a long-term investment. And that is how you lose a lot of money. I say when you've got a stop, a mental stop, and it takes it out, it doesn't matter if it's 25 below, points below your mental stop. If you were in this for a trade and you had your stop at 400, it's 375. The way I do it is I sell it. You eat it, and it sucks, but you got to follow your systems. Don't let a trade become a long-term loser. And I'm not saying, I don't know, Boeing could come back. And a lot of times they do come back. You'll always notice the ones that come back. You won't notice the ones that don't. So it's scary, but if you're trading and you have to do your stop, I've always followed my rules, and I sell wherever the hell it is.
Okay. All right.
Real quickly, back to the ratings real quick before we wrap up for the day. Jefferies is upgrading in Nutanix and China Mobile this morning, both to buy. Barclays making a call on the airlines. They're upgrading Spirit Airlines to overweight, and they are downgrading – I had it on my list here – where is the Barclays downgrade? They're downgrading one airline, and I just...
Oh, maybe it's Love.
JetBlue.
Thank you, JetBlue. JetBlue.
Love is keeping... Is somebody else downgrade? Love is down 3% here now.
JetBlue to neutral this morning. From Jefferies. Love, not seeing any
coverage.
It's got
to be the Boeing.
Yeah.
It's got to be something to do directly with Boeing here. And I'm not, you know... I don't know why it's Southwest. There's got to be some relationship here or something.
Morgan Stanley downgrading a couple regional banks, downgrading SunTrust.
Maybe it's just they have too many Boeing planes or something.
Maybe. Pivotal is downgrading Zoomies to neutral. And those were, I guess, the biggest ratings.
AAL's the other one getting hit a little bit too, but nothing's getting hit harder. The airlines, LUV is getting hit the hardest. So I'm assuming that's all to do with Boeing.
Let's just call this the William Lay segment. He's very concerned that we haven't mentioned GE yet today.
Down. Why is GE down today?
It's down 11 cents.
Why? Asking why GE is down is like asking why the sky is blue, you know?
It recovered nicely, though. I mean, if you think about it, it had that huge intraday tumble, I believe, on Tuesday, and then it put in the double bottom here on 905, 907. Bill or anybody else who's trading in GE today, keep an eye on 966. That splits the highs from Wednesday and Friday.
I think it's a sell if you get anywhere near 10 bucks. I think they're going to line up as a brick wall up there. So I think down for GE. I'm a GE bear.
Terry.
GE bear again.
Terry Linhart and William Lay point out that Southwest, and I'm not confirming this, only flies 737s. So there you go, man. People do their research. Thanks, Terry. And thanks, Bill.
These people, they know things. They know more than us, which is why we like having the chat to go along with the show. But that is going to do it for today's show. If you missed any part of it, you can catch our podcast or just rewatch the show on YouTube or on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play. Please remember, all the information from our show is for informational purposes only and not meant to be investing advice. Thanks to everyone who joined us in our chats today. It was great, both on YouTube and premarket.benzinga.com. Hope you all have a good rest of your day, and we will see you on Tuesday. Have a good one.